When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Comics Collective, the weekly show where we talk about a comic graphic novel, and sometimes get to talk to some of the really awesome people who are making the books that you love. I'm your host, Anne, and today I am joined by the awesome David Pepos. David, how are you doing today?
I'm doing so great, Anne. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited to catch up with you, and I am excited to talk about my brand new series at Dynamite Entertainment, Space Ghost. Yes, coming out May 1st, and I can't wait to talk all about it with you.
I'm so excited. This is what, the third or fourth time you've been on the show? Your favorite, and for good reason. Always love talking to you. And Space Ghost is driving me crazy, because it's one of those things that, like, the moment someone says Space Ghost, my mind instantly, I have those flashbacks, and I go immediately back to my childhood, and I remember watching all the Hanna-Barbera shows on Boomerang as a kid, and I had such a love for Space Ghost, for Johnny Quest, for everything in between, all the 1001 shows that feel kind of similar, whose names I can't remember anymore. I think Space Ghost was with a dinosaur show that I can't remember anymore. Dino Boy. So I have to ask, just how did we get here? What, for anyone who, you know... who is kind of like me, and Space Ghost kind of exists in that, like, the fringe of their memory. Can you explain just a little bit about who Space Ghost is as the character and how you got to the point where you're now writing the new Space Ghost comic?
It's a great question, because I grew up as a kid of the 90s as well. And so my original introduction to Space Ghost was Coast to Coast. And I only knew of him as a talk show host. And it wasn't until I got my first internship in the industry that I learned about the legendary Alex Toth. Mm-hmm. Who was an amazing artist who was the co-creator and designer of Space Ghost. And for those who aren't familiar with him as a character, he's sort of like a space Batman in a Flash Gordon, Star Wars kind of sci-fi universe. But there's also lots of shared DNA, not just with, like, the Adam West Batman, which is the year that Space Ghost debuted, but you also see shared DNA with Superman. You see shared DNA with Flash Gordon. You even can see a little bit of sort of retroactive shared DNA with, like, a character like Iron Man, because Space Ghost is a cosmic crusader who fights pirates and criminals across the galaxy using his power bands, which give him the power over fire and ice and lasers, as well as force fields, and his invisobelt, which allows him to turn invisible like a space ghost, along with his three sidekicks, teenagers Jan and Jace, as well as their pet monkey Blip. And they just fought this deep, iconic bench of supervillains that I think is just as stacked as anything that Batman or Spider-Man or The Flash might have. You have Zorak and Brack and Metallus and Creature King and the Council of Doom. And you can see that Space Ghost had, like, a lasting influence on so much of pop culture. And so the fact that there's a generation that only knows of him as a talk show host, it really only scratches the surface. I liken Space Ghost as, in certain ways, like pop culture archaeology. I would say Coast to Coast, and why I'm so grateful for them, is that they kept Space Ghost's name alive, but they also kind of, like, preserved the bones of the concept and Amber. Mm-hmm. Nobody was really touching them for years outside of the handful of comics revivals that were done over at DC. And so for me, I get to kind of feel like I'm that archaeologist who's able to kind of exhume those bones from the Amber and discover that they're just as strong as they ever were. So we're taking the original 60s vibe and concepts and energy and excitement mm-hmm. of Space Ghost, and we're bringing it into the 21st century and doing a deeper dive into these characters than anyone's been able to do before.
That's awesome. I'm glad you brought up Coast to Coast, because that was, I remember my friends in middle school were obsessed with that show. They had copies of that, you know, just showing when I grew up, they had copies of that show on their PlayStation portables that we'd watch during Pep Band games. And I was going to ask, did you find it difficult? Because Space Ghost is such an older, pulpier character. Did you find it difficult to bring a character from the 60s and find a tonal place for him in the modern era, especially when that humorous version of him is arguably his most known version?
Honestly, it was a breeze. You know, the great thing about Space Ghost as a character and as a concept is so much of those original episodes existed based on vibes. They were based on, you know, they were only 5 or 6 minutes a pop. So besides the Council of Doom, which was like an epic six parter, that it was just like, what? Like every other episode was 5 minutes and not tied into one another whatsoever. There's no backstory. There's no continuity. And so for me, when Dynamite approached me to take on this book, the thing that we discussed pretty quickly was like, well, you know, are you guys looking to reclaim Space Ghost as a superhero, like a traditional superhero mm-hmm. take? And that was something that Dynamite and Warner Brothers was really interested in doing. And so for me, I could see the raw potential. I could see, especially for me, who I love kind of injecting little bits of various strains of pop culture into my work. Most of my books are very much, it's a this meets this, kind of a jam band remix. And so being able to do that on a character level, saying, okay, like, you know, for Zorak, for example, you know, how do we view him? You know, are there things that I can do to kind of keep elevating him as Space Ghost's arch nemesis? Or Brack, for example, who I love him as a villain, because unlike a lot of Space Ghost's enemies who are like looking to conquer a planet or, you know, take over the universe, Brack's just looking for a paycheck. He's just like a dirty mercenary pirate. And so how do we add like a unique wrinkle for him that he would organically populate this universe? Tonally, the way that I've described this book, we're somewhere in between Batman the Animated Series and Batman the Long Halloween. Okay. And so we're able to take a lot of done in one and self-contained stories, so we can get readers who don't know Space Ghost, we can sort of do a world tour of his most iconic enemies. And that way, every month when you pick up an issue of Space Ghost, you get a self-contained story. You get to kind of rack up those adventures alongside him and get to know him and the twins even better. And that also gives us the maximum punch for a cliffhanger for the handful of times that we do plan on doing a two-parter. That means that like, oh, if you see a cliffhanger, that means Space Ghost is on his heels. Things are really dire. And that kind of gives us a nice room for a really satisfying comeback in the next issue. So, I think for me, honestly, I felt like there was so much untapped potential to these characters. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think something that I've always enjoyed doing in my work is kind of taking stuff that everybody knows about and then saying, okay, like, how do we dig a little deeper in this? How do we kind of add new facets to all of this? And so, yeah, Space Ghost has been a real gift of a book, particularly because Dynamite, when they approached me, you know, they were envisioning a fairly generous runway. I've pitched a little over a year's worth of story for this series.
Awesome.
Knock on wood, as long as there's no like catastrophes and, you know, I mean, the world is an unpredictable place right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this should be the longest run of a book that I have done to date. And I think Dynamite and Warner Brothers have been such amazing partners in all of this. And they've really given me and artist Jonathan Lau a lot of latitude to revisit these characters and try to portray them in the most dynamic and character driven way possible.
That's incredible. Listen, I will read years and years of Space Ghost. That's I will do it. I was gonna ask you. You have such a passion already for these characters, and I wanted to talk a little bit about your mindset going into this. Was your goal to just take as much as you can from the old show and kind of bring it, put fresh life into it? Or are you going to kind of go the same way that the Joe Kelly series went a few years ago when they rebooted it at DC and kind of introduce your own characters into the lore and shake it up a little bit and have like a nice smash?
It'll be primarily the former versus the latter, because there's so many amazing characters for Space Ghost. And I rewatched every episode from the 60s run, and I rewatched every episode from the 80s revival and Space Stars. And I reread Joe Kelly's run, sort of his Batman Begins origin take on the character. I reread Future Quest and Future Quest Presents. I read Mark Evanier and Steve Rude did a one-shot for Comico, which was beautiful. And so the only thing longer than the pitch document that I sent to Dynamite, which was over 30 pages, was the notes that I took. I have a 40 something page note document where every episode is laid out beat by beat by beat. And so for me, if anything, the big challenge was I had pitched Dynamite 12 issues in an annual. And for me, it was just more of I knew pretty quickly which characters I wanted to have spotlight. I knew which villains I felt we needed to have because, you know, the Council of Doom is such an iconic part of Space mythology. But and then I knew that there were other villains that I was like, okay, we could fit them in cameos. For example, you'll see Tanzit and Brago and One Eye and Lurker in our first issue, and you can see it in our preview pages as a band of space pirates that hits space colony Omicron. But there are other villains that it was agonizing, where I said, okay, I got to kind of leave them in the back pocket. If the demand is there for more, I know where I can kind of slot them in, and I know, I have a sense of what kind of adventures I can tell with them. But, it's less about introducing brand new characters, and it's just more of how do I add a new coat of paint to the ones that already exist and make them kind of as shiny and exciting as they were in the 60s. It's really about just digging deeper into the characters. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that really anchors it for me, it's that core quartet of Space Ghost and his sidekicks. And I think, for me, it really hits a personal note for me. My younger siblings are triplets. And so I kind of know what it's like to be the older person having to count everything in threes and making sure that, you know, they don't hurt themselves and they don't get into trouble. Mm-hmm. But also just the sense of like knowing that having that trio, they have their own interpersonal dynamics and they have their own hierarchy. And it's a very fun thing to be able to explore in my characters. You have Space Ghost, who, he's been this cosmic crusader who was born out of a pretty deep personal tragedy. And you'll sort of get into that a little bit as our series continues, although we won't be spending too much time to belabor the point. It's a fairly simple origin. But he's been out there fighting pirates for years, basically sort of in his way of kind of getting a secondhand revenge, similar to something like Batman, where he's trying to stop distant colonies from being hit by pirates and criminals and hijackers that the Galactic Patrol is just too spread out to stop. But he's been a great crime fighter, but he's been pretty isolated as a human being. Been alone on Ghost Planet. He's been kind of wallowing in his tragedy for some time, and he hasn't really had a need or a purpose to be a human being until he crosses paths with Jan and Jason Blip. And those characters are I think some of my favorites to write. I based them off of a Dick Grayson and Babs Gordon from their original adventures as Robin and Batgirl, but also Tim and Lex from Jurassic Park. To Jan and Jace. Just like my siblings, they have their own hierarchy despite being born a minute apart. That's kind of the way that I approach Jan and Jace. Jan being the oldest by a minute. And so she's the responsible one. She's the thoughtful one. She's put in a position that a lot of only girls can be put in their families, especially when it's just them and a bunch of dudes, is that she's like, I have to think things through because my brother is not going to do it. And Space Ghost often gets tunnel vision. But that means she's tough. She's feisty. She's the one who will call out Space Ghost on his crap to his face. Mm-hmm. And so, she's a natural with a blaster, But also, I think, you know, her dynamic with Space Ghost really reminds him how over his head he is in this. He's the ultimate single dad. And so, you know, we have a sequence fairly early on in the run where, like, Jan lets him have it, and Space Ghost just leaves because he would much rather punch out an asteroid field than, like, deal with the wrath of a 14-year-old girl. And I feel like that's something, like, a lot of single dads and older brothers can relate to. Mm-hmm. Whereas Jace, he's the younger one. He's the impulsive one. The way that I've approached him, although I don't know if I'll ever make it explicit in the text, is I always saw him as someone who struggled with dyslexia. He probably wasn't a natural fit in a traditional classroom setting, but he's a natural with his hands. You know, he's a born mechanic. It's like he was born to a cockpit. You know, he can fly with the best of them. And he's the one who kind of looks before he leaps. He's the impulsive one. But he's also the one with the sense of humor, you know, whereas Jan, based on the tragedy that has put her and Jace in Space Ghost's orbit, you know, she feels like she has to keep everything together. And meanwhile, Space Ghost can be a little bit begrudging, you know, as he starts to feel out his new role. Jace is the one who's like, if I make enough jokes, if I can keep the morale up, that's how I keep everybody together. And I think that's like such a sweet characterization for that kid. And so, you know, having Jan and Jace playing off of each other and then having the two of them playing off Space Ghost really provides a lot of the emotional through line for our series. You're going to see from our very first issue, why does Space Ghost wind up adopting two kids and a monkey? What are the circumstances behind that? And, you know, how do they go from being these orphaned rescues to becoming his sidekicks, to becoming trusted partners, to becoming sort of a surrogate found family in their own right, and eventually, you know, being Space Ghost's new reason to live. And that is something that I touched upon in the very first page of my pitch, was this is the story of how Space Ghost finds his humanity again. And it's because of those two kids. And then, of course, we have Blip as well, their pet monkey.
Yes, of course.
It was one of those things, you know, when I was first coming up with the pitch, I was thinking, like, well, should I keep Blip? You know, is that something that is that too weird? Is that too goofy? And I realized, no, that's like the cherry on top of the sundae. Like, it's such a specific choice that how could you tell a Space Ghost story without Blip? And so, without spoiling too much, he's very important. I'd consider him to be honestly the linchpin of our entire narrative. And at the same, you know, he's funny because he's a loyal pet. You know, he's Jan and Jace's pet before the pirates attack Omicron. But also, you know, he's mischievous. He's food driven. You know, he's precocious, I guess is a good word to describe him. But also, you know, there's sort of that. It's fun to be able to tell things with him. And Jonathan Lau does an amazing job. Where, you know, he can't speak English. And so, you know, a lot of that is very physical comedy. It's a lot of expressiveness and just sort of putting him in funny context. Mm-hmm. But also he's loyal to a fault. And we do have a Blip-centric issue that we have planned a little bit down the line that if it goes the way that I plan for it to go, it'll be my favorite issue of the entire run. He's not just an ornament. You know, like he's a fun character in his own right. And so, yeah, I mean, I think Space Ghost ultimately taps into themes that I really like exploring. And that's the found family element of it all. I mean, you see it from my very first book in Spencer and Locke, where about, you know, a guy who invents his own best friend in order to kind of survive some pretty harrowing circumstances in his childhood. To even work like Savage Avengers, where, you know, you saw that cover and it's all the grim and gritty Marvel people. And then you realize by like issue 3 and 4 that they all have marshmallow centers and that they all just like kind of needed to find a friend that understood who they, you know, what they were going through. And so if you like those books, I think you're going to find a lot to love about Space Ghost. I can tell you that like being able to kind of revisit those themes and have such a long runway to do it and to also be able to kind of jump from different tones and genres on an issue to issue basis, because we're doing so many of these done in one stories with all these, a wide spectrum of villains. It's a real gift as a storyteller and it's really kind of kept me very invigorated for all of these issues is because I know like it really is. You get to kind of try all 37 flavors in this book. And it, I think, is a testament to the work that Alex Toth did on Space Ghost and his supporting cast and his deep bench of villains, that it all feels very organic to the character.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Well, if I wasn't excited before, I definitely am now. And that's not just me saying it because I'm interviewing, but holy crap. Listen, everyone, I need the blip issue. I need the blip issue so bad. And I need you to buy this book so we can get to the blip issue. That's the only thing I need. I love your ability to find that human core at every story you tell, whether it's Spencer and Locke, whether it's The Punisher, whether it's Savage Avengers, all your stories, they're so fun, but then they hit you with that unexpected moment of emotion and you're just like, holy shit, was not ready for that. I can't wait for this book to do that too. Everything that you've said about this book makes it feel like it's quintessential David Pepos, and that's exciting to me.
It's been really a special process that Dynamite and Warner Brothers has really given us a lot of latitude to mm-hmm. kind of examine the books in a way that feels like us as creators, both mm-hmm. me and Jonathan Lau. And I think it's been a wonderful experience because it's a nice counterpoint to, say, the work that I did on Punisher, where we had to be very kind of laser focused on like what we were going to do with that book.
Right.
Be very thoughtful and considerate mm-hmm. about every choice that we made. And on top of that, when I was approached to do that book, I was asked, listen, like this origin story, like we also need to do it in 4 issues. So that's like, that's a tight time frame to do any of that. And so being able to kind of jump from a project like that to a project like Space Ghost, where it feels so expansive, and there's really, I think Warner Brothers understood the thing that I first said to them, which is like, you know, there's no backstory here, right? There's no continuity to any of this stuff, to the point where, you know, DC Comics tried it twice. They perfectly understood. And for me, you know, both, I think, like the pragmatic element and also I think the ethical element of like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to try to like cherry pick from another publisher's continuity. It didn't feel right. Also, I don't want anybody to have to do homework to do this, to get into this book. Like, if you're interested in this book, the only thing you have to do is call your comic shop to reserve a copy. We will get you in from issue 1 on. And every issue, we get to kind of watch these characters grow and evolve and change. And I think that's the other thing that really is a gift about a book like this is, you know, if you write a book like Batman, for example, mm-hmm. or, you know, it always will kind of revert back to the status quo at some point. Like that's just, it is, you know, they call it the illusion of change. And mm-hmm. you can only, it takes a lot to tell a story that'll really like impact the long running tapestry of a character like that. And you can see, you know, characters like, for example, if Dick Grayson graduates, you know, into Nightwing, you have Jason Todd, or you have Tim Drake, or you have Damian Wayne waiting in the wings. Like it becomes a generational thing, which makes perfect sense structurally, given that it's, you know, a series that's been going on almost 100 years at this point. Space Ghost, though, like there is no other Jan and Jace. So I think being able to tell a story like this, that we have a pretty clearly defined beginning, middle, and end, we're able to kind of have a full character journey for these characters, and we're able to have them, you know, say, you know, they're in the middle of a battle with one of Space Ghost's bad guys, and something happens in the middle of that. That's something, that's a ball that we can then pick up and run with in future issues. Mm-hmm. So every issue can be standalone, but also, you know, they can kind of have consequences that ripple out mm-hmm. down the line. And I think it's really fun because that way, like, the characters aren't static. So you get kind of like, you get to follow them. And I think certainly as a writer, you fall in love with them very quickly. And I think if you haven't fallen in love with Space Ghost and Jan and Jason Blip by like issue 2, like your heart is made out of sterner stuff than mine. these are really, yeah, they're characters that kind of have like really fun, rich personalities to them. Mm-hmm. And I will say Jonathan Lau is a big part of that. Jonathan does so much heavy lifting. I was so blown away by his pages. I've been a fan of his since he worked on Green Hornet with Kevin Smith back in the day. And so, you know, he's able to kind of jump from these big explosive moments of action, but also then he like shifts gears to these like very like quiet character driven moments. And so you see like, you know, I mean, I love there's, you know, we have a sequence of like, you know, Space Ghost, you know, doing some high flying adventure stuff. But then like, for me, we watch Jan and Jace like hanging out at Ghost Planet. And, you know, you see like Jace just like kicking back in his chair and Jan's trying to like figure out, you know, what, you know, where's this asteroid field coming from. And, you know, I like the fact that Jonathan knows this is an ensemble book. Like he understood the assignment immediately. And the fact that it would be so easy to ignore Jan and Jace, or it'd be so easy to just be like, put him in the background, like whatever. But that's not the story we're telling. This is very much space. It's a Space Ghost story, but it's also the story of like how he bonds with these two kids. And so like they are just as important of a part in this book as he is. And Jonathan doesn't forget that. He really makes it a point that he makes the characters look really cool, but he also like, he never forgets that like there's a vulnerability to them and like an emotion to them that, makes them really fun to follow. So I'm very excited for people to see kind of how Jonathan reinterprets some of these characters, but also I think somehow locks in, I think, to what the core qualities that have made them endure this long.
I was going to ask about how Jonathan was doing adapting characters like Zorak, who have this just innately Hanna-Barbera quality to them, how he was able to get that, you know, adapted for the page. I'm very excited to see that design personally, because I, to be honest, I wasn't a fan of the Zorak in the Joe Kelly book. I'm like, okay, right. I can kind of see it. I can kind of see the vision. I'm very excited to see Jonathan Lau Zorak.
Yeah, I am too. I can say that he will be drawing that soon. He's drawn one iconic villain so far, and it's a really cool take on him. And then he's drawn another deeper cut that I think he might have outdone himself on. It's really cool. And then, yeah, he's working on another member of the Council of Doom presently. I think that's kind of like half the fun of it, is just like the way that I've been kind of re-examining these characters and kind of adding new context to the framework that Alex Toth built. I think Jonathan is doing the same thing, and that like, you know, trying to live up to Alex Toth, you know, or trying to do like a cover version of Alex Toth, that's tough, you know. And I think Jonathan instead is kind of doing the bold thing, which is he's kind of taking these characters. He's like, okay, how am I going to do this in my style? How am I going to kind of reimagine this in a way that like suits my artistic style? So it's really cool. And I think it's a way that kind of injects a freshness to this book that it wouldn't have had otherwise, if we were just trying to do, you know, the exact kind of slavish reproduction of the original cartoons. Instead, like you can see in our preview pages, like it's like, okay, like Tanzit and like honestly Lurker and One Eye look like kind of a little creepy. And granted that, you know, we're not going for like a scary tone in this book. We're not doing Robert Pattinson's The Space Ghost. You know, like it is very much like, you know, Long Halloween, Batman the animated series. But seeing the way that Jonathan's been reinterpreting these characters has been really fun. And for me, it's kind of like, you know, you feel like a kid on Christmas where you see you're waiting for the issue to, you know, you're waiting for inks to show up and you're kind of like, oh, how's Jonathan going to do this? And then you see it and you're like, oh, my gosh, like that's not at all how I thought he was going to do it. And it looks so cool. He's been a wonderful collaborator, you know, very versatile and also ruthlessly fast. He draws like a Terminator. It's really all I can do to stay ahead of him. And that's good because, like, honestly, it kind of keeps me on my toes. And same thing with our colorist, Andrew Dollhouse, who, you know, adds so much energy to it. And Taylor Esposito, who I've been buddies with for years. He's actually the reason I was able to get my first book off the ground. Mm-hmm. He introduced me to my first colorist, the late Jason Smith, for Spencer and Locke. And so, Taylor and I have wanted to work together for years. And so the fact that we finally got to do it, what a gift. Like, I feel like it's a creative team that we're all super excited about this book and we're all trying to bring our A game. And it's sort of like this fun little game of like, how do we one up each other? Mm-hmm. It's a very fun book to be working on and to see the pages as they're coming in, especially once they're lettered. I feel like you always feel that way. At least I always do as a writer, is like you see the pages coming in and then you make your edits on the script before you send it to the letterer. And you're kind of like, boy, is this going to work? Like, does this thing kind of click? And I've read the first two issues already. And I'm like, yeah, that clicked. That really kind of, I swung for the fences on that one. And I'm very pleased with where the ball went. I can't wait for you to read it. I'm beside myself with excitement.
I always love it when I hear a creator talking about a project and they talk about the creative team that keeps pushing them to do better. I love that so much. The way that you can work together to push each other to new heights, that's honestly one of the most exciting things you've said so far. Because I can't wait to see what they push you to do. That's going to be awesome. Give me just a second here. I was thinking, I'm so happy that you said it's going to be like a issue-to-issue self-contained stories, because we just finished reading Tom Strong on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And it is so refreshing to be able to open a single issue and have a single story that's like contained and done, but then one that builds up later and you see these characters come back in ways you didn't expect. So I'm very excited to see that. Did you feel like that was more difficult or a little bit easier than like the stories you've been doing with Marvel?
Yeah,
so far, well, where it feels like it has to be more focused and streamlined.
Honestly, it's a different kind of muscle group, but one that honestly, as I've started doing it, has actually been easier than trying mm-hmm. to do like a 5-issue narrative, where you have to have one single narrative and you have to break it up into 5 and you have to figure mm-hmm. out, okay, how does each part of this one narrative like stand apart? Whereas for Space Ghost, we're able to really kind of shift gears in big ways. So that way I never get stuck in a rut. I'm never feeling like, okay, like how this feels samey. How do I make this thing feel different? Because the characters they're very archetypical, mm-hmm. In the same way that like Batman has his rogues gallery, where you kind of get a sense of what a Joker story will look like versus a Poison Ivy story versus mm-hmm. a Mr. Freeze story. There's something very elemental about all of Batman's villains. And I feel the same way about Space Ghost, Zorak, for example, has a very different vibe to me than Metalis. And I'm able to kind of take different strains of pop culture where like Metalis, for example, I see him as like General Zod by way of Bane, by way of a little bit of Doctor Doom. And so I'm like, okay, like that's a fun character. Like that's somebody who I know just based on the original cartoons, he was leading his robot armies and he has his like impenetrable suit of armor. And okay, how's that guy gonna like beat the hell out of Space Ghost? That's gonna be a fun story to write that is a little bit further down the line. So each story feels very different, and I think being able to kind of switch gears between okay, what's the villain? What villain do I want to play with? But also, what's the emotional through line here? For example, we have an issue pretty early on, like Jan and Jace first arriving on Ghost Planet. And like, how does that work? Like that's a fun kind of way to build those characters up. What kind of villain would serve here? And so I'm kind of able to kind of go back and forth. And so it keeps me from getting too stuck in a rut in terms of the development of it all. But also, this is something that like I've been trying to watch the market and I've been trying to see kind of what's successful right now, especially mm-hmm. because the comics industry feels very volatile at the moment. And, I see books like Ryan North's Fantastic Four. I see Steve Orlando on Scarlet Witch. I see Jed McKay on Moon Knight, where, many of those stories are self-contained. They're done in one. And they're doing really, really well. And so I thought, like, I tried to do this a bit in my Punisher miniseries. Although, like, that, I think because of the runway being what it was and because of, you know, the overarching narrative, which was Joe Garrison having to figure out who framed him for his parents, right, for his family's murders. You know, it wasn't as apparent in the way that I'm doing it in Space Ghost, where it's just sort of like, okay, like, you know, this month we get Zorak, you know, this month we get Brack. And so it took a little bit of doing when I was doing the development of it all. But if anything, I kind of like it. It feels more like short sprints than a longer marathon, even though when you read the whole thing from beginning to the end, it's going to be a bigger marathon than anything I've ever done. If anything, I think this new format has been really useful and helpful. And I think it's in part because, in certain ways, because it's not a shared universe. You know, mm-hmm. we're able to just kind of do the cool bits of superhero tropes and sci-fi tropes with this established character who's got such a cool range of powers and such an amazing wide variety of villains, and it can be self-contained. It doesn't have to cross over in anything else. It doesn't have to set up you know, anything crazy down the line. It just gets to be like a cool superhero story that like stands on its own merits, and that's fun. Not to say that I don't love the continuity of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've been working at Marvel for some time, and getting to play around with stuff like Savage Avengers or Moon Knight City of the Dead or all the fun villains that we threw at Joe Garrison and Punisher. But this feels very streamlined, I think, is the best way to describe it, is that we know what the core texts are, and there's not that many of them. And so being able to kind of exhume those texts and pour over them and figure out like, okay, what about this stands out to me? And then to be able to take that ball and just run with it on an issue to issue basis. I've never worked on a project like that before. I have the feeling those are pretty rare. I consider it a real gift and a real chance to kind of take the biggest swings possible where nothing structural can hold me back.
I love the idea of David Pippos unbound, unlimited.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that, like, you know, I of course, having restrictions winds up being helpful to my process, like knowing like, okay, this character is not available. Like, okay, we can do, you know, figure something else out, but not having to do that and just being like, oh, this character you want? Yeah, you can do it. Like just green lights, nothing but green lights. Yeah, that's cool. And it definitely makes the thing move a lot faster. And if anything, I think it's, of course, there's always going to be a degree of compromise when you're working on big licensed materials. So the fact that like there's very little compromise that I have to do right now, knock on wood, it stays that way. But like, I can tell you, you know, Warner Brothers has given me two notes since I started, one of which was, I can say it because we're not doing it. I had asked if we wanted to give Jan and Jay superhero names. They were like, no, that's cool. You don't have to worry about that. And then there was some villain that I wrote that they were like, hey, he's got like sort of like not really a swear word, but like, could we give him like a space kind of swear word? I was like, yeah, sure. Holy flark it is. You know, and that's it. And I'm about a third of the way through kind of the initial planned run. So the fact that like, I'm feeling pretty good a third of the way into it, like, yeah, like, I am becoming more and more aware that like assignments like that don't happen all the time, that like, especially when you're working on bigger names and bigger characters, there are certain continuity things that you have to work within. You got to make sure that you're kind of working with the general flow of traffic that's going on for the rest of the shared universe. And being able to just be like, nope, it's just Space Ghost. It's just Space Ghost and it's just these villains, and you can do kind of what you feel is right. Yeah, super fun. I can't say enough good things about it.
Well, that's fantastic. I won't keep you any longer, because if I do, I'm going to make you start telling me every single detail that happens in the first issue, because I feel like that we're going to get into that nitty and gritty. But I'm so excited to check this book out. For everyone that's listening, put the fear of God in them. When is the final cutoff for this book going to be?
Final order cutoff for Space Ghost number 1 is April 8th. That's a Monday. Tell your local comic shop to pre-order. We've got a number of amazing covers. We got Francisco Matina, who's doing our A cover. We've got Jay Lee doing our B cover, Bjorn Behrens doing our C cover, and Michael Cho doing our Gold Key retro-inspired D covers. And I know Michael has said that he's on board for 12 issues. So if you like that cover, stick around because he's got more where that came from. And yeah, we've got foil versions, virgin versions, line art versions, blank cover versions. You name it, your comic shop will be able to hook you up. So just, tell your local comic shop you want to pre-order Space Ghost number one. Tell them you want Space Ghost added to your pull list. Because, I want Dynamite to know and I want Warner Brothers to know that there's a demand for a book like this. And that even if you only know Space Ghost as a talk show host, there's so much more beneath the surface. And we're going to show you why he's the greatest superhero in the galaxy. Yes, call your comic shop. Issue one drops May 1st. That's the Wednesday before Free Comic Book Day. If you you know what, I'll do you even one better that, you should pre-order this book, but, God forbid you forget, there should be a preview of Space Ghost in the, new Johnny Quest Free Comic Book Day book that will be dropping on Free Comic Book Day. But that said, May 1st is Space Ghost. You really owe it to yourself to check this out, because if you want to see Space Ghost doing kind of Batman, the Animated Series or Batman, the Long Halloween, this is the place to do it.
Sounds perfect. And you know what? Final cutoff day being on Eclipse Day feels very poetic for Space
Ghost. That's funny. I did not know that. That's funny. It's on Eclipse Day. I will be using that in the marketing moving forward. Thank you for that.
No problem at all. David, it's always fantastic to have you on this, our lovely coast-to-coast podcast, if you will. I appreciate it so much.
My pleasure. Where we're going, we don't need coasts. but thank you so much for having me. Yeah. And thank you for everyone out there listening. I hope you check out Space Ghost. And if you haven't checked out my other work, Punisher, Moon Knight, City of the Dead, and The Devil That Wears My Face, you can check out all of those books anywhere comics are sold.
Yeah. Last, just other plugs. Where can people find you when you're not checking out some awesome shows?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Pepos D. You can follow David Pepos Comics on Facebook. You can subscribe to my newsletter, Pep Talks, at bit.ly/pepnews, or visit my website, which is currently under construction, davidpepos.com. We were attacked by hackers, and Space Ghost has yet to find them. You can find me at any of those places. Also, conventions. I'll be at WonderCon in Anaheim soon, as well as C2E2 in Chicago, San Diego Comic-Con over the summer. And then I believe I will be at New York Comic-Con later this year as well.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Check out David and his work and get that book ordered. If you don't do it, I will find you. Thanks. Bye.